Welcome to the Hope Unyielding podcast. After a long hiatus, I'm so excited to launch season 2, where we'll be wrestling with the question, where is God in my worst case scenario? Hope Unyielding has always been about stories of God's faithfulness in dark and difficult times. But this season, we're going even further, looking our very worst fears in the face through the eyes of believers who have experienced them and have not been destroyed. Believers who have stories to tell of God's goodness and love during their own dark night of the soul. We're not going to shy away from hard topics or hard questions, but we're going to face them head on, unyielding in our pursuit of the hope God promises as we live in a broken world. I'm honored to have Bethany Peck on the show for our first interview of season 2. I came across Bethany's writing on Instagram a while back and was struck by the depth and beauty of her poetry, which is both vulnerably honest about pain and trauma in a broken world, yet solidly hopeful, anchored in the security of Jesus. As I looked more into Bethany's story, I knew I had to try to get her on the podcast. Today, Bethany shares her story of betrayal trauma, divorce, and the healing process God has led her through. Whether you've been through something similar, or are simply struggling with life not unfolding as you'd prayed and hoped, I know Bethany's story will offer encouragement and hope rooted in the goodness of God. Hi, Bethany. It's so nice to have you on the podcast. Thanks so much for coming on to share part of your story.
Thanks, Hope. I'm so glad to be part of this. It's really exciting.
So could you tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and also your writing, which is something that I think is just really beautiful and meaningful, and is actually the way I stumbled across your ministry was through your Instagram page.
Yeah, no, I'd be happy to share that. So yeah, I guess just to answer that first question, a little bit about me. So yeah, I am someone who has grown up always knowing the Lord. I'm just really grateful that I've known the Lord my whole life. I grew up in a really wonderful Christian family, going to church, and faith was just really, really important to my family. You know, it wasn't just like a Sunday church thing. I grew up reading the Bible, going to Christian programs, and, you know, just really learned what it meant to have a personal relationship with Jesus. So I'm really, just really thankful for that. and then, yeah, so so that's kind of, yeah, the background of me, context I kind of grew up in. And yeah, so my writing, I'm so glad that we've connected over Instagram and got connected in that way. So I have a little Instagram account. It's called Beautiful Purpose Writing. I started that about 3.5 years ago, and just wanted to have some type of outlet to share pictures of nature. I'm a big nature person, so I just love sharing nature pictures, and then to kind of share my poetry that I do. And I sort of did it as like a I don't know, like accountability for myself. Like I wanted to keep kind of pursuing my writing, and I thought, well, if I start something that's like public, then like that'll kind of keep me accountable to keep going. So it's been a really fun thing. And I think like this one surprise to that has been like the community that it's been. Like you know, there's a lot of challenges and issues with social media, of course, too. And, you know, putting boundaries in place for ourselves is really important. But I've been just surprised by the beauty of the community in it and connecting with really wonderful people, you being one of them. So it's been a joy.
Oh, well, thank you for sharing. So the theme of this season of Hope Unyielding is, where is God in my worst case scenario? And you've gone through what would be many people's worst case scenario. You discovered your husband was unfaithful and you went through a divorce. And I would just love to hear a little bit about that backstory. And after that, we can, you know, get to where you found God's faithfulness in the midst of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for that very gracious question. So since I mentioned a little bit of the background that I was coming from, you know, had a strong faith in the Lord. I love the Lord. I wanted to follow him. I also am able to look back now and see how I had a much more naive and kind of simplistic and like black and white view of faith. So when I became a teenager, it was like the late 90s and purity culture was a big thing. So I can really look back now and see how I had more of a behavior based view of faith, especially when it came to sexuality. And more broadly than sexuality too. My kind of understanding, I think, of the world and of faith was that in following God and particularly like in obeying the rules, that that meant that I was going to be blessed and have a good life. So I can also see that there was like a works-based righteousness in that as well. Yeah, I was a good Christian girl, and so I loved the Lord and followed him, and I thought that meant that I had a lot of good coming for me. And you know, I think there's a little bit of like Disney theology that can be part of that too, that it's like, oh, like I'm gonna grow up and I'm gonna meet someone and you know, like a Prince Charming or whatnot, and just have this wonderful you know, it's probably Disney and also like American Dream like theology too, that I'm gonna have the wonderful husband and the wonderful family and the white picket fence and all of that. You know, plus growing up in church and reading the Bible, like I knew that marriage and family and children are also something that are really important. So, you know, there was just so many different like factors that were leading me to just understand like this is the path that I need to follow, and then this is what it's going to look like after I do that. Plus, I just, you know, when you're a young woman, like most of us, like we want to have a boyfriend. We want to, you know, we dream about who we're going to marry and all of these different things too. So yeah, I wanted to have a boyfriend. I wanted to get married, loved children, always wanted to have a family. So that was me at 22. I went to a Christian college and, you know, so I thought I was doing all of the right things. So yeah, so then I met someone when I was 22. And really hadn't had a boyfriend. So it was kind of all new first experience. And yeah, everything just clicked. So we were in a Bible study together. We went to church together. We had a great network of Christian friends. It was just like very much like the world that we were, you know, the community that we were in was very Christian and faith-based. And so it just kind of seemed like everything was clicking, everything was falling into place. And so yeah, so we got engaged and we got married. And so I was excited to, you know, start to think about having a family. We were definitely like following the rules that I had come to understand kind of from purity culture. So I thought, you know, we were doing all the right things, like, you know, we were abstaining, like all of these things. So that meant blessing was going to come on the other side. So unfortunately, the first couple of years of my marriage were not what I expected. And I've more and more talked to other Christian women or just, you know, women in general who aren't Christian, who kind of share similar things that you go, you know, when you haven't been married, you don't know what it's like. And so you do just kind of bring with you kind of Disney and Hollywood dreams, and you think it's going to be one thing, and it's a lot harder. It's not exactly what you expect. And so I was experiencing that in a lot of ways, particularly in regards to our sexual relationship. It was just not it just it wasn't what I was ex was well, it wasn't what I was expecting. And so I was very confused and didn't really know what to do about it, and I didn't know who to talk about it, and so I just didn't. I just kind of ignored it, and I can see that I did a lot of like spiritual gaslighting, I think you could say, to myself. Like I told myself that everything was okay and that I just needed to be joyful and happy and grateful. Well, I kind of ignored the pain and the confusion that I was experiencing. So then 3 years into our marriage, I had the first discovery of my husband's sexual addiction. And just to pause and like even just define that word discovery. So that's kind of a term that we use in the betrayal community. And it mostly just means when you discover something that's hidden by your partner. So it might not even be something that you would traditionally think of as an affair, but if it's something that's hidden, you have this discovery then of what this actually is. And it's quite scary. So over the course of 2 years, then I learned about my husband's betrayal. For most of that time, I had been led to believe it was just a technology issue and a mental, emotional, spiritual struggle. But by the end, I discovered that my husband was actually living a double life and had been cheating on me sexually for years. It's so you I you know you asked about like what this is like, and it's brutally painful. It's brutally painful. So to give an illustration, at the beginning of this journey, I thought it was mostly a pornography addiction. But that alone, just crushed me physically. Just having a terrible panic attack. It plunged me into deep depression. Anxiety went through the roof. I was struggling deeply with shame. I mentioned this backdrop of purity culture. So, just anything about sex, I just felt intense shame that I couldn't talk about. And so I isolate. What does shame do? It isolates you from people. So I isolated myself. So about a year and a half later, I finally learned more of the truth, and that he'd been acting out sexually outside of our marriage for years. And again, just the physical impact of that information was just really traumatizing. More panic attacks. It rocks your reality. It rocks your reality. And it's the information that you learn in this situation is crushing, but it's the fact that trust has been broken, and that your reality is completely changed. So just to fast forward, then I did go through a divorce. I'd always held out hope, and I didn't really consider that until the end. But I won't go into the whole long story, but realized that that was the best option. So not only was so this was all over like a 2 year period. So not only was the betrayal like the worst, we're talking about worst case scenario. That just felt like such a worst case scenario. But then divorce was too. There was a moment kind of towards the end where I felt like I was just in such a deep, dark pit. And I didn't know how I was going, I didn't know how I was going to get out. I was like, I don't want any of these options. But God really, he rescued me, and he's done some redeeming work, which I'm excited to talk about too.
And how did your church community respond to the divorce?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So, yeah, I would say my church community has been really supportive. It was a little bit strange because I was living in a different location, and I left that church and that area and came back home to where I grew up, and so where I live now. So I will say that like the church that I left was it was kind of mixed reactions. And I don't think that there was like shame or frustration or like thinking that I did the wrong thing with divorce, but there just was a lot of disconnect, and just I felt like a lack of support, I guess you could say. Unfortunately, I've mentioned shame already, and I'll probably mention that more going through this conversation. When we're talking about divorce and anything related to sex and affairs in the church, like unfortunately, there's just this shame that still surrounds it. And so it felt like no one wanted to like talk to me about it. So that was hard. The church that I'm a part of now has been really great. Has been really wonderful. And I've not, honestly, the shame that I perhaps still struggle with in regards to like being a divorced woman in church, I think is mostly internal. I think it's mostly coming from like those voices in my head from like my upbringing that divorce is not something you do as a Christian. It's just not right. It's not what you're supposed to do. I really think that still just comes from like my head, from Satan putting lies in my head. Overall, people I encounter have been really wonderful and supportive, and don't think any less of me because of that.
Well, that's really encouraging for me to hear because I do know throughout the years, divorce was pretty much equivalent to that scarlet letter in the church. It seemed to be like that. And I do find a lot of encouragement in the fact that you have found support and that although you are working through that sense of shame that is not founded, that people are coming alongside you and saying you don't need to be ashamed.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Thank you. No, I've been really encouraged by that as well.
Now, on your Instagram page, you use the word betrayal trauma. Could you explain what that is and how that's different from just feeling pain or hurt?
Absolutely. And I think that's a really, really great question. And so I think maybe the best way to start is to just have like an understanding of trauma and what that is. And so how I would describe it is that it's when your bodily system is overwhelmed. So it could be a one-time event. It could be something that is chronic overwhelm. And so you might even sometimes hear people talk about big T trauma and little T trauma. So it's like a capital T and a lowercase T. And so like a big T trauma is something we might think about, like being in a car accident. A little T trauma might be something that I'll actually mention pornography. Discovering your partner is involved with pornography that's going over a long course of time. Like that's not necessarily like a one-time event, but it's something that over time is very stressful to your person, to your body, and can just have a lot of physical symptoms for you. And so, and then I also do want to say that like all hurt is hurt and all pain is pain. And we need to see that and validate that for each other. One of my favorite books is Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl. And he was a Jewish psychiatrist who survived the Holocaust. So he was in a concentration camp and he talks about, suffering. So hurt, pain, trauma as being similar to how a gas behaves. And it doesn't matter like the size of the room, a gas will fill that room. So every type of hurt is something that is really, really hard for a person. So it's not a matter of like assigning levels of suffering or pain or trauma, but it is really important to understand this physiologically. And I would say my journey reflects a lot of this misunderstanding. So I'm really grateful for this question. One way of thinking about, so particularly, so I was talking about trauma. So now to kind of put the layer of like betrayal trauma on that. And there is more research that's coming out about this. So I'm really glad about, but it's a shattering of trust. So you have trust and belief in the person who is closest to you, an intimate partner, a spouse. And that is shattered. And so that can be just very, very to your physical, your physical body. There are a lot of symptoms that go along with this. just a few, I've already mentioned this, but anxiety and panic attacks, depression, difficulty concentrating, intrusive thoughts, that's kind of a big thing. Sleeping, eating, problems. Those are just a few. It could kind of go on and on. But there are some very specific symptoms that are experienced by betrayed partners. And so yeah, you can put that in the category of post-traumatic stress disorder. That's really what it can be. And I guess to maybe just put like a little flesh on this to illustrate my story. So I thought that what I was going through was deep pain that I would need to get through and get over. So I remember telling my parents when I was in a really dark moment where I had some decisions that I needed to get through. And I said to them, like, I'm not going to be a victim. I'm not going to be a victim. I don't want to be bitter for the rest of my life. I was only 32 when all of this was exploding. I still had hopes and dreams for my life. And I was this like resilient, type A, overachieving person, and even having that foundation of faith. Like I knew that God redeems things. Like I knew the story of Joseph, what man means for evil, God means for good. So I had that foundation and I just thought I could just kind of power through this. So, but I, what I didn't realize was what a process this would be of realizing the physiological impact of all of this, all of this on me. So, just another little story. I was doing therapy through all of this. I'm so grateful. I've had good counselors that I've been going to, which even pausing for a moment and just thinking like that younger version of myself, like growing up. Local culture and like the idea of, even the idea of like going to therapy or going counseling, it's like that's like some, that's something that, really messed up people need. Like as a Christian, like you don't need that. We have God. And oh my gosh, just a plug for finding a good counselor. Like it's amazing. It's just such a holy relationship that I'm so grateful for. So I found myself a trauma therapist a few years after my divorce because I was just sensing like there's just something is not clicking. Like, why am I not healing? And so we did like an intake survey, like a depression and anxiety survey. And one of those things where like you find your score at the end. You add up all of the answers and find your score. And I was like, moderate depression, moderate anxiety. As I'm going through this with the therapist, she asked if I had any questions. And I said, well, yeah, I do. I was kind of surprised because there were a lot of symptoms on the anxiety test that weren't on the test, that I haven't aren't on the test. And she said, oh, like what? So I started naming some things, brain fog and memory loss being one of them, and having like a very sensitive startle reflex, like loud noises like bothering me. She said, oh, that's because that's PTSD. And finally, like, I just remember how that was honestly such a relief to hear that it was like, oh, like, this is like why I am suffering so much. Like, my body has been through something really traumatic, really, really stressful. And, even while like my brain, like my spirit might want to say, okay, I'm healed, I'm good, like, my body is still really struggling, physiologically. And so as I've just like embraced this more holistic view of myself, that has what has really helped me with my healing and understanding my body. And God created our bodies, right? Like his design is good for our bodies. And so healing our body and our soul is what is just so important for anyone who's gone through a very stressful event, and then particularly in this world of partner betrayal, just recognizing it's a serious trauma, and taking care of your body is so important. So I'm sorry if I went on too long about that, but it's like I'm very, very passionate about bringing understanding to this, and just for Christians as a whole to like understand the importance of our body. I think I had this modern day Gnosticism that like the spiritual life is what is more important. But no, God created us as spirit and flesh, and he's going to redeem both of that. Like he redeems our bodies. Our bodies are really important. And so taking care of our physical selves is just that's good and holy work.
Modern day Gnosticism. I think that's really profound. And I do think, just in conversations I've had with friends, we do tend to minimize the physical and hyper spiritualize things when, we think about Jesus, our Savior, came in the flesh. And that just shows how important that is as well. And I do think it's incredibly validating for women or men who have experienced betrayal trauma to be able to name it as such, because I know when I think of PTSD, the first thing that comes to my mind is, okay, someone who has been in the military and has experienced war, or like you said, someone who has been in a car accident or has experienced an explosion. And I think to use that word gaslight, I think it can be easy to gaslight yourself if you haven't gone through a physical trauma to say, well, why am I experiencing all these physical symptoms? So I think for anyone who's listening that is experiencing or has experienced something similar, that is validating. And it's also encouraging to hear how you experienced God's kindness in all of this. But I was wondering, did you ever struggle during this process with believing in God's goodness?
I did. I confess that I questioned God's goodness during this time. And I struggle with regret and remorse over that, although I'm continually like learning self-compassion through the compassion and mercy that God has for me. But I went through such a long season of feeling like my life would never change, and then I would just be stuck in sadness forever, and that perhaps God had forgotten me. I also then, a couple years after my divorce, went through just like another round of suffering, which was interesting because I think, I mentioned earlier about like, oh, pushing through the hurt, pushing through the pain, and sort of had this vision that like, oh, well, you have your season of suffering, and then you're supposed to get through it, and everything is supposed to be okay. It was still that like happily ever after like mindset in my mind. But a couple years after my divorce, I ended up having really serious back pain, which I strongly believe was just in all of the trauma that I had gone through. And so I had really serious back pain that laid me out for months, quite literally. I ended up losing my job, losing the house that I was living in, just like having my world rocked again. So I did not understand, and it just was very natural for me to be like, God, I know your truth. I know the Bible, but I am just not feeling it. I'm just not seeing it. And so help me understand. Like I feel like I'm forgotten. And I do, I am really fascinated about, like the interplay between our spiritual life and our physiology. So, I kind of shared a little bit about PTSD and what that looks like and how that was acting, showing up in my life. And so it's really interesting to think about the interplay of those two things. And so I would say that, there was just this di disconnect between what I knew and what my brain was feeling. And as I've learned a little bit more about neurobiology, like it's just incredible how God has like designed our bodies to be able to heal. We have like these things called neural pathways. So mine had gotten like programmed to be so accustomed to everything being terrible and just like one blow after another. And so, I just think it was natural, or it made sense. Maybe it wasn't natural, but it made sense that my brain was like, no, I don't think ever life is ever going to get better. And then I believe that we have an enemy in this world who is a roaring lion seeking to destroy, and he can whisper lies in our mind as well. I mean, under the omnipotence of God, but he is trying to attack us. And so the combination of those two things can be really, really difficult. And so, yeah, for me, it led me to, just questioning his goodness. I don't know. I appreciate this question because I want to share that with compassion to anyone who's listening who might be feeling that okay, feeling that too, that it is okay to struggle and have those questions. I'm on the other side of this now, but it was very hard. It was very dark. But God doesn't abandon us. While we may feel it, like God doesn't abandon us. He's just bringing us through that dark season. And I just there's this passage from Jeremiah that I wanted to share that I was reading recently that just blew me away. Like when you're thinking about this, that like Jeremiah says, like, why is my pain unending? He's talking to God. He says, why is my pain unending? My wound grievous and incurable? You are to me like a deceptive brook, like a spring that fails. So he's having this like incredibly intense dialogue with God. Like, accusing him of being a deceptive brook, like a mirage in the desert. And I think it's so encouraging to me to see that in the Bible. that people that the prophets and the characters of the Bible that we grew up like learning about, like, oh, let's remember that there's this side that like they could be honest with God, and it's okay to have these questions. It's okay to struggle. And we just have to trust that like he will get us through it, and he's not going to abandon us.
Yes, when I am questioning God's goodness, I do find scriptures like that so incredibly encouraging. I know, especially for me, the Psalms, Jeremiah and Isaiah have been so helpful because, one of the ways I've experienced God's goodness is the intimacy of being able to go to Him and be completely raw and to know that He's not going to turn me away, that others might not understand, but he understands me perfectly. And I was just curious as to what are some ways that God met you in your pain and trauma specifically, and what did he reveal about his character?
Love that question. And I love what you just shared, and that resonates with me. There's been some similar things for me. I think just learning that he is there for me and wants to have this intimate relationship with me. So I'd say that's how he met me. Like, he showed up for me and taught me to show up to him with my full self and all of my emotions. Going back to that earlier version of myself that I mentioned, that was like spiritually gaslighting myself and just everything is okay. Everything was feeling in this deep, dark pit that I was in, that I finally had to bring it to him. And he met me with love and compassion and just, little things that would show up in my life with a friend showing love, or I think I mentioned I'm a nature person, like just meeting me in his creation and just showing me those good gifts, and that just giving me peace and hope. And I would just say his word was just a way that he met me time and time again, just opening the Bible, even if it was sometimes I was like, oh, I what a, I'm frustrated, I don't understand, but I went to his word, and that encouraged my heart. I would come, I would just come back to that and just find his words that would bring hope to me. And so he's just character. He's just showed me how he really is using everything to refine us. He is that good father. While we're going through deep pain, he's working things for good in our hearts and our lives. And it might not be the way we expect, or the way that we look, or way that we want it to look, but the things that he's doing in our heart and in our character, he's refining us, he's maturing us in our faith. And that is what he's working things for good. He truly is working things for good. We know, like, the story of the Bible, the arc of the Bible, he is a redeemer. And we, like, my life is a part of that. I just might not understand now why things have been the way it is, but I can trust that he is working things for good.
Are there any ways specifically that you've already seen him work them for good, even if you're not sure of all the ways that he has done so?
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, a couple things that come to mind is just the way he's redirected my life. I now live where I grew up, like in my hometown, and never like wanted to be back here. Like, always wanted to like go away and leave, but now I've been brought back here and I've been living here for 6 years, and I'm so happy here. Like, I love it here. Just even, again, I've mentioned nature, like the nature, the parks and the nature in the area that I live has just been such a healing thing to me. And just even being able to like be close to my family, that has been such a gift. When I first moved back home after my divorce, my parents were caretaking for my grandmother, And she had a stroke, and I mean, she was in her late 90s. So, you know, I was we knew it was probably getting close to the end, but I got to be close to her for the last like 6 year 6 months of her life, and then like be with her when she passed away. And that was really like a turning moment for me, about like 8 months after my divorce, that I realized like, oh my gosh, I just went through worst case scenario, things that I just never could have dreamed up or imagined, and just feel so devastating to me. And I've gotten to spend this really precious time with my family. I've gotten to spend this really precious time with my grandmother, which is like something I will cherish and treasure the rest of my life. And so it's like I can't make sense of both of those things, yet I just want to be grateful for what I have with this. It's like a strangely wrapped gift, is the way I like to think of it. So that's, you know, I just there's stories like that. We've obviously talked about my writing, and that's how we kind of got introduced. And so I would even say that like the restoration of my creative life has been like a really, really good thing that has come out of this. So I started turning to art when I was in like, you know, dark phases of depression, just like something to like keep me going. And so I do a lot of artwork. I turn to writing, all of those things. And I feel like I'm becoming that the suffering has refined me in such a way that I'm becoming like more of my true self and understanding myself and, you know, having this intimate relationship with God, that I just feel like a much stronger, healthier person. And so I'm super grateful. It's a super beautiful thing. It doesn't mean that the really hard things are still there, and I feel that grief, but I'm just able to like see the beauty too, and I'm really grateful for that.
Well, thank you for sharing. You mentioned grief, and that was a topic I'd love to talk about just because my friends and I, although we haven't gone through your specific situation, a lot of us are in a place of grieving dreams that we had. So many of us had that, I would say, Disney theology, like you put it, Disney theology, American dream theology. And we thought, okay, we're going to go to college. We're going to get married to someone at 22, and we're going to live happily ever after, be in ministry together, and all of that. And although there's nothing saying that we won't get married in the future or have some of those things, we've had to grieve the fact that, well, okay, none of that happened in our 20s or in our 30s yet. So I'm just curious as to how you've gone about grieving some of those dreams. And even one of the dreams that you did mention on your Instagram page was expecting to have a family at this point. Could you just talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. And yeah, thank you for sharing all of that. And my heart goes out to you and your friends, and you know, the similar friends that I have that were grieving different things. And it's really hard. And so, yeah, I would say grief has been the most interesting aspect of of this journey for me that I didn't expect. Like again, you know, I was like, push through this, get through this. And yet grief has been with me through all of this journey, and you know, can come and go in seasons as well. And yeah, so after I went through my divorce, I think I had this vision for my life for how God would heal me. That like, you know, it's just amazing how he's continually refining our theology and our understanding and our maturing us in faith. So, you know, I thought that I would get through the suffering, but like, oh, like, yeah, God, you know, God's a redeemer. He brings joy in the morning. So that must mean that he's going to give me a husband and children. So I'll find a new husband. And like, children are such a joy. So wouldn't that be so cool to see how he would give me this and give me this joy that would take away all of the pain that I've been through? And so now it's been 6 years since my divorce. I actually turn 40 later next year, still a year and a half. So it's like, but I turn 40 next year. And so over these past few years, as that hasn't worked out, like new waves of grief have come on that, oh my gosh, what, like, and grief is so multi-layered too. I just want to validate that. It's so multi-layered. So there was this grief that, okay, like what I thought God was going to do isn't happening. And so almost this like questioning of God, like, oh, these are supposed to be the good things that I thought you would give me. Like, why isn't this happening? But then also just the very real grief of childlessness, of being alone. And I just want to validate that for anyone who's going through that or knows someone who's going through that. It is hard. And while we can like put aside the Disney theology and realize that that's like, you know, that's not biblical. At the same time, like when we look to true biblical theology, like we know how God has designed us and that marriage is, you know, marriage is how intimate re relationships, marriage is how we're wired. Like as females, like our bodies are designed to, you know, to bear children. And so there's like this very real, natural desire for that. And so when that's not happening, it is a very real grief. And I have struggled with it a lot. I've really struggled with it. I guess I would say for anyone particularly dealing with that grief or other types of grief, what I have done is I've embraced the grief. I've done my best to embrace the grief. You know, maybe at times I haven't done it as well, but what the betrayal trauma journey taught me was that I can't hide from the grief. So what that has looked like practically, journaling has been a really big thing for that. Journaling, trying to talk to people about it. So doing for me, I've mentioned counseling, like counseling is really important, and just kind of letting friends and family into that as well. And I don't do it perfectly. You know, sometimes I think it can be hardest to talk to the people that are closest to us about our grief, and I'm guilty of that. But just trying to let people into that grief so that you're not suffering alone, I think is really important. And then I often talk about like grief and gratitude going hand in hand. So I do very much believe that gratitude is an important thing, but if it's just on its own, it can be it can get into that like toxic positivity like realm where you're just like stuffing everything down, which I've been there in the past. So grief and gratitude really have to go hand in hand. But I think when they do, it can be a beautiful thing. It can be a really beautiful thing, just seeing the goodness that you have around you. I like this concept of creative comfort. I think God is really creative in how he can comfort us in our grief and give us opportunities to see our desires fulfilled in other ways. And so, you know, that's what I'd maybe encourage anyone with as well, to like understand the depth of your grief and like where those desires are coming from. And so for me, particularly with childlessness, yeah, maybe whereas in the past I had this vision of like, you know, the perfect, wonderful, like little, you know, like Anne of Green Gables, like, you know, you probably read that too, like the Anne of Green Gables
Oh,
kids. Yeah, exactly. Or Little House on the Prairie or all of those things, like the vision of like the perfect little family that I was going to have. And so just now, like in wisdom and maturity, to recognize like those are stories. We have stories in our mind that we put as these, you know, dreams that we think we're going to have. And that's not true, because we know the friends that we do have, that we have families, like we know it's really, really hard.
Right.
It's really hard, right? But still like recognizing like, okay, let's put aside the Disney, the Anne of Green Gables theology, but dig down deep into where that's coming from, and just still like recognizing that it's like a beautiful thing to have those desires. And so how can I practice them in different ways? So I don't have children. I don't have a family, but I have a very nurturing heart, and I love to caretake and be nurturing and create all of these things. So how are ways that I can do that in my life? And I've found certain ways. Like again, it doesn't take away the grief, and I still have to like acknowledge it each day. But by like exercising those desires in you know, those inclinations in different ways, like it can feed my soul in really good ways too. And then just still daily practicing that grief and gratitude, and that can That's what keeps me going.
I love what you're saying about grief and gratitude, because I do think the tendency is to swing to one side of the pendulum. And I think in American culture, there is that toxic positivity culture. And I've noticed in other cultures that might not be the case. So I do think that what you're saying is very healthy and really biblical. I think that's very encouraging and will be encouraging to anyone who is grieving a dream
I
right
hope
now.
so.
What would you say to someone who has just been blindsided by something traumatic? So they just found out their spouse has a pornography addiction, or they're being unfaithful, or even they've been betrayed by a friend. What would you say to them?
I would first just say that I'm really sorry. I am so sorry. And I think this is such a great question because I think we all feel this in different ways, and seeing people go through really hard things around us, and probably having experienced it too, and maybe not always getting the best responses. And so I think that acknowledging pain is just such an important thing. And so I would just say, I'm so sorry. I see your pain. I know this. I might not know this, understand the exact situation, but I can understand how this is really hard, and I'm just so sorry. I'd next then probably even just recommend, like, maybe not saying any words and just being there as a presence for, and it can depend on the relationship, how close you are, but just like being present to someone in their pain is really so special. And I have not practiced this as well as I should be, because we don't want to see others suffer. We don't want to see others suffer. As we can, want to be a fixer or a doer. And so I confess that, but I've experienced it, just the presence of people, and I want to be that person too, that just is showing up. And then I just, again, to, yeah, so to someone who just has kind of experienced this, like, worst case scenario type thing, I would just, we've sort of talked about this, but I would just say, acknowledge that grief. Lament is so important. Acknowledge all of the losses, grieve it, take it to God. I'd also encourage not hiding from the pain. And this is hard. This is hard, but, and again, we've touched on this, I think, a little bit, but just like going to God with the pain, going to others with the pain, is what is going to help us to heal. Because when it's stuffed down, it's just going to hurt us emotionally, spiritually, physically. We have to let others into it. We have to let the Lord into it. And numbing is just going to do long-term damage. You do need breaks from the pain. I would encourage someone who's, going through something devastating to say, like, okay, yeah, you do need breaks from the pain sometimes. Like, sometimes you just need to go for a walk and just look at the pretty flowers and be in nature and forget about it. Or, watch a good TV show, or just do something fun. But then we have to come back to it too. We can't numb, because that's just going to really hurt us long term. And God is a God of comfort. Like, he wants to be there to comfort us. So just come to him in your grief, and he will comfort us. And go to others as well. I'd sort of already said this, but I just, yeah, would really encourage, and maybe particularly in this realm of, like, betrayal trauma, that's kind of my world. That in particular, it's so crucial to have a support system around you. I didn't do that for about a year and a half, and I was dying inside. I was dying inside. Once I finally started trying to get help for myself, and I got myself in a support group, oh my gosh, that was like a game changer. Like, finding people who are suffering from something similar is just, it's just incredible. Like, I think that's part of the way God has designed our bodies to heal. Like, we heal in community. And actually, like, a lot of trauma therapists or writers talk about this, like, we heal in community. And so there's just really something powerful about that. And I think, so that could really be for any different type of suffering, like, Oh, certainly grief. Like if you lose a family member, if you've gone through a miscarriage, like mental illness, like any type of very devastating thing. There are communities out there, and you can find like you're not alone. Just reminding people like you're not alone. And so there are other people who've gone through similar things. And so connecting with those people so that you can just feel less alone and heal in community and get the hard stuff off your chest. It's really it's just amazing how God can work through that. So yeah. Those are some different things that I would encourage you, and just keep going. Like God is with you. He'll carry you.
Well, thank you so much, Bethany, for all you've shared today. I know it's been incredibly encouraging to me, and I know it will be encouraging and validating for anyone listening who's gone through something similar or who is struggling with grieving a dream. There's just so much we've gone over that I think is really important to talk about as believers. And I'm just so thankful that we got to talk. Just
Me
as a
too.
last question, where can people who are listening connect with you and find your writing?
Yeah, thank you. And this has just, yeah, been such a sweet time to get to talk with you. I really, really appreciate you and how you are encouraging all of us to look to the Lord through devastating circumstances and the grief of unfulfilled dreams. So yeah, so my writing, I'm on Instagram. So it's beautiful purpose writing. So it's like beautiful underscore purpose underscore writing. And so I share yeah, a lot of my writing and poetry and also pretty nature pictures there. And then my website is bethanypeck.org. And yeah, I do some kind of longer form writing there and just kind of have links to some of my other writing. I do have an article like about divorce and PTSD and some different essays I've written about those things that probably more eloquently say what I've been saying today. So if anyone's interested and wants to take a look at those, they're all there at bethanypeck.org.
Well, thank you so much. Well, everyone listening, please check out Bethany's writing. It's beautiful and it's gentle and it really points towards the goodness of God in everything.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to my conversation with Bethany. If Bethany's story resonated with you, I know you're going to love her poetry. You can read her work and follow her on Instagram at beautiful underscore purpose underscore writing. Also, if you've been encouraged by today's episode, please share it with a friend and leave a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, which will help spread the word about Hope Unyielding to more listeners. Thanks again for listening, and I hope to see you next time.